Go to ymhvirtual.com right now and get tickets to the third YMH Live. Crazy guests and crazier content. Hey guys, we're doing something a little different today. There are people that I've wanted to have long form conversations with, you know, just one on one, that it doesn't really feel like it's best for the Your Mom's House podcast format. And that's what we're going to be trying to do. So it'll be sometimes, you know, maybe a sports person, a business personality, somebody in the arts who you just go, I'd rather just be a conversation than do the Your Mom's House, you know, clip kind of show. So I'm really hoping you guys enjoy it. I'm really excited to bring today's guest to you. I had a great time talking to him. He's a 17-year NFL vet and, of course, a Hall of Famer, really interesting guy. So here's my conversation with Tony Gonzalez.
This shit is big time!
Who is Randy?
Don't bring anyone loving to this.
Your mom in the fucking stand!
All right, thank you very much for joining us. Says here you used to play football. What was that like?
It was a lot of fun.
Thanks. No, I'm just, that would be. Have you done interviews like that? Where, like sometimes for me, they'll go, the best is when they go, hey, you know, I'm on the road, and they're like, man, you're going to be in, you know, Chicago. There's these radio station. They really want to have you on. And you're like, well, you know, we're coming in from Detroit. And they're like, they're big fans. And then you're like, okay. And then you show up and they're like, so, how do you get on Netflix? And you're like, what the fuck? Like, that's your question? How do you get on Netflix? Like, have you had somebody be like, the NFL, that must be hard.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, shit.
Yeah.
Like, all right.
Piece cake. What for a comedian?
Yeah.
It's got to suck. Just you come in there and they're like, the hey, be funny.
It's the worst.
Do funny.
That's when you know. I have a personality that doesn't work with that. So like when they're like, you're ready to be funny, I shut down. And then I'll tank it on purpose. Like,
really?
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be a part of anything you do. So like I've done radio shows where like you're like they go, you arrive, you can like the best ones are when they're engaged. Mm-hmm. Like they're actually asking, you know, questions that make sense and like shows that they're interested in, like a good interview, right? And then the ones that are the worst, well, you'll show up and the guy's like, you know, reading something, then he's like, hey, and you're like, okay. And then he's like, all right, we're coming back. And what do you mean to ask you? And you're like, whatever you want to know.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean what I want you to ask? They're like, well, I'll set you up. And you know, I'll be like, nope. And then you see them panic because they're like, hey, man, are you going to give me something to say? Because I'm lazy and I don't know what to ask you. And I'll be like, no, just go ahead, man. And then the thing starts and they're like, it says you were born in Cincinnati. And you're like, yeah. And they're like, is that the question that I was, where was I born? Sure, man, we could do this. I mean, I don't know. For a radio guy to just be like, be funny, to me, it sets me in. What's the worst like the question to get from like in sports, like when you're doing interviews? What would you roll your eyes at the most?
I don't know. I think it's just. Because the question, I think it's different though. I don't know if it's the same as being a comedian.
But there's
coming
like,
in, they're like, you got to be funny.
Yeah,
you
they
be,
do. Maybe they definitely
want to know
that.
About like, oh, what do you think about this game?
Yeah,
that's usually it. What do you think? What do you think the chances are for such and such to go all the way this year? And you're like, okay, well, and then, but I don't know. That's easy. I don't have to be funny.
That's true. I mean, there's so many like, as somebody I've loved football my whole life, and you see things that are, you know, like. Things that I kind of go, of course, now when you hear the coverage is, hey, there's a game coming up. What are the keys to the game? And they're like, can't turn the ball over. And
yeah.
Like, that shit, is insightful, man.
that's what we do in our business now. Yeah. That's since I made that transition, obviously going to now in front of the camera and people want to know. I figured it out. It took me a while to figure it out that people don't. Anybody can sit up there and talk. You could do that.
Yeah.
You could read the scouting report and go, well, they run cover two and they blitz 50% of the time. Yeah. And just he's like, it's what Terry Bradshaw and Howie and Michael working with those guys now. I've seen that it's entertainment. Terry always says that. Like, we're in the entertainment.
We're in entertainment. Yeah.
We're not just telling, okay, cover two splits.
That's true.
We got to have a good time. So.
Yeah, that's true. So it's like what you end up getting invested in as the viewer is the chemistry. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to hear these guys talk about football, but I do want to see like some laughs and see that they get, I don't want to watch people that don't get along, yeah. right? Like no one wants to see, oh, there's real friction between Terry Bradshaw and Tony. Yeah. Like, you know, that's not going to be fun to watch. And you want, I like a little bit more, like there's levels to the knowledge of the game. And so like as somebody, like, you know, I'm like probably like a lot of fans where I played high school football, peewee in high school football. Uh-huh. And you go, and I've watched football ever since then. I like college football. I like the NFL. I love getting like that little bit of extra knowledge where it's like, it's just more than you know as a regular fan.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, learning about shit that you guys, you know, that happens with cadences or, yeah. you know, all of a sudden you guys are pull up a thing and you go, see how in this formation, it's a tell. Like for some reason, this linebacker clearly studied tape uh-huh. because he's look right before the snap, he's dipping back a few yards.
Yeah.
And you go like, oh, I never would have put that together. But you guys study the film or whatever, watch it. And now as a viewer, you feel like you're almost have knowledge that you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, it's like extra insight. That's entertaining to me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that's entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I love it. That's the way I try to do it.
Yeah.
I always tell people, I just want people to pretend like the only thing missing is our beer up here.
Yeah.
When we're on in front of the camera.
Sure.
And then giving good information. Really, that comes from, I think, like people want to hear stories too.
Yes.
Like back when I was in the locker room, Julio Jones, you should have, you know, Julio.
Yes.
Right? Like he jumped 12-foot ceiling and touched it with two hands.
It's all those, dude.
Yeah, and you're like.
The freak athletic stories yeah. are, I think everybody that likes sports wants to hear that. Like, hey man, this guy touched the top of the backboard. And there was like witnesses, you know, like shit like that. I don't know. I mean, that's everybody loves like combine times, you know, like those Deion stories, like he ran them in fucking, I don't know, slippers
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, he gets
like,
out of the limousine.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He didn't even warm up and yeah. ran it backwards and ran 4-2.
Or that, yeah. That what's the story about him on draft day or something or pre-draft and the Giants give him the play, like their playbook or something.
You know? I didn't hear this one.
You didn't hear that
no.
one? Where it was like, he's doing, you know, like the pre-draft interviews. I mean, this is obviously 87 or 88, I guess. Pre-draft interview. And he meets with them and they have some type of binder and they're like, hey, we want to ask you. And he hands it back and they're like, what are you doing? He goes, when do y'all pick? And they're like, fourth. He's like, oh, I won't be around then. And he just walked out. Yeah. Like shit like that. I mean,
we
you go,
had the balls for that. That's what yeah. I love about. That's why he's so good on TV or anybody who you just can't give a shit.
Yeah.
And us as athletes, this is why I think athletes, it's hard for most of us to make that transition to television because you being a comedian, by yeah. the way, you get to say whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
You can cuss, you can talk about politics, you can talk yeah. about race, sexual orientation.
People still get mad, by the way.
Yeah, but you don't care.
Yeah, that's true.
You guys are the freest people in society.
I think you're right. I think we're the freest people now that you can control your own space mm-hmm. and like your own content. But you rewind just before this current age and comedians would definitely toe the line more. I mean,
really?
Like, I think so. I mean, there's always the ones who didn't ever give a fuck and just.
Like Eddie Murphy, right?
Yeah, like, you know, Roseanne. Like, she was just like saying shit, doesn't care.
Yeah.
But also, I think, you know, you have to weigh that those people are super successful. So they're like, you know, if people get mad, it's not going to affect my ability to work. Uh-huh. But I think the difference is right now you have all these comics have their own platforms, their own, you know, channels and shows, and they're not relying on, oh, will NBC still consider me for something?
Yeah.
Because if NBC's going to be upset by something, then I should pull back. Like, that's starting to erode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And when, as athletes, we, there's only so many jobs out
yeah.
there for television.
I mean, did you want to do it? Like when you were playing.
I was preparing for it.
You were?
I had a show out in Kansas City called that Marcus Allen had first.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It was called The Locker Room Show. And it was just for local television. Uh-huh. And so when he left, I got there in 97. I played with Marcus. And then, which a boy coming from LA playing with Marcus Allen was pretty damn
cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But so when he left, I took over the show for 3 years or whatever. So that kind of got me going.
And but yeah, like that's also like in the plans, right? You're like, this is going to end playing, and then that's what I'll.
I didn't know if I was really going to do it, but I knew that okay, if it was in there,
yeah.
I'm like, shit, I better get ready then, just in case.
Yeah.
If I do want to do it, I don't want to look like an idiot. You know?
Dude, how are you walking around? Let's start with this. So, like, I mean, you like all these stories, and you know, you see like real sports, and they're like, you know, this guy played five seasons, and yeah. now he looks at a board to spell words that a computer will say yeah. for him, like. Crazy brain damage. Guys are like, my knees don't, my hips.
Yeah.
And then like you see someone like you played 17 seasons in the NFL. You're like, hey, what's up, man? Like, yeah. how the fuck are you put together?
I got lucky.
Yeah.
I do believe that genetically too. Like some people are just running down the field now.
Yeah.
And you see him like, he tore his ACL. And nobody even touched him.
That's true.
So that never happened to me. I think it's luck, but because there were so many times where I'm blocking. And the defensive, let's say our offensive lineman threw his player on the ground next to me. And my coach is like, shit, don't look at this right here.
Right.
And I look at it on film.
And you're like,
and it's like a half of a second. He's yeah. like, he's all, if you didn't lift your foot up, you'd be done for the year. I've had that happen a bunch of times.
Sure.
So it's luck right there. But then also when you're like, you look at Gronkowski.
Yes.
Of the tight end, great tight end. His career got shortened because I think his style of play.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like Jeremy Shockey. I don't know if you remember it.
Of course.
From New York,
yeah.
where he catches the ball and he's coming like, I'm going to run your ass over.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get as many yards as I can. Like to me, there's a time and place for that. I would do that, but I also
would finesse it.
I'd finesse it a lot. And I think that was my basketball background
uh-huh.
where it was like, hey, you got to use a little finesse here. Get your ass down. Like Russell Wilson right now.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be able to play for a long time where I look at Dak Prescott, where he got hurt,
yeah,
and his foot was sideways, and I got
that was rough, dude.
It was so sad for him, but then at the same time, I was like, "What are you like? You gotta, yes. gotta get down, bud. I mean,
yes.
you gotta live to fight another day." Like Russell Wilson, I doubt that would happen. And then there's freak accidents; you never know. But
of course,
you gotta. I don't know. I always felt like,
but it is like a combination of these things, right? Because like yeah. you know, you like I said, you know, the first there's like the average NFL career thing where it's like three seasons. Like, so you not only surpass that, like by multiples, but to be healthy, I mean, it is pretty, I mean, so you're saying though, that part of that is yes, your genetics and your, you know, it's lucky, but it's that you were also playing smart.
I was always trying to play smart. So yeah. taking the hit, when the guy comes over the middle and I see I'm about to take a shot, sometimes I would stop my feet and you probably couldn't even tell, but I would stop running
mm-hmm.
right before he hits me. And then I would jump back as he's hitting me.
Oh.
And so the crowd would go, ooh, like it's a big right. hit. And I'd be like, well, like,
I'm protecting my body.
I protect my body and I'm fine.
Yeah.
And the guy can get up and celebrate, but I'm fine. Because
did you tell other players this? Like, you know, as you became like,
yeah.
also like, hey man, you're going to fucking die. Like, like well, take care of yourself.
Well, yeah, you tell people, but they don't care.
Yeah. Cause it's I remember, this is another, Miami dude, speaking of shock. Yeah. Brendan, Merriweather was that? Yeah. It was Merriweather. Uh-huh. He was a,
the defensive back?
Yes, the defensive back.
He used to come nail people? Yeah, he used to go.
That's what I'm saying, though. But, like, he would crown hit people all the time.
Yeah.
And, like, and then, you know, the NFL, there was, like, a period where it became, like, you're used to seeing that. And then they were like, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
But he would still do that.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're getting fined.
Yeah.
You're knocking yourself out and on top of other people. But it's like, I guess what I'm saying is it doesn't matter how many people probably told him, like, stop doing that.
Stop doing it.
It's just like.
So I remember, I remember playing against him, and I before the game even started, I went up to him
yeah.
because he had hit a couple of guys' knees and, yeah. and blew out their knees. And I said, hey, man, relax. Don't go to my knees, okay?
You would actually say that?
Oh, I would tell him that
yeah.
Before the game. And then he'd be like, all right, well, don't try and run me over then. Don't make me look stupid. We'll take care of each other. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, if I have you, if you're in front of me and you see me and I see you, I'm going to do what it takes. And the same thing, come knock the shit out of me if
right.
you can.
Yeah.
But if I'm not looking, don't hit me down low.
Yeah.
Just hit me up top. I promise you. Like, I was like, I'm not saying I'll go down, but I mean, just do that. And,
yeah.
And he would do that. And
how?
During the game, I remember one time he hit me
yeah.
and he comes up and he goes, hey, I could have got you there. I could have yeah. got you there. Yeah. I'm like, thank you, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. How often, like, how common was that type of conversation?
That better wasn't common at all.
No, but I mean, not just about specific about, hey, him and what he and the way he's tackling was like the pre-game. Hey, dude, like let me holler at you for a second about whatever.
Yeah,
like was that a comment? Did you?
I did that.
You
I,
did do that.
I did that, and I think you could do that when you get older, once you establish yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't doing that my first, you know, five like, 6 years.
Hey, you're a rookie. Hey, man, let me talk to you real quick.
Hey, Ronnie Lott, come here. Come
let
here
me
real quick,
talk
man.
To you about tackling. Like, what? Wait, when you were in, because it is rare, obviously, that you played college basketball too. How soon. You said one time like that you, I mean, obviously you knew you were a superior football player,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If you were equal at both, would you have leaned to basketball?
Oh, I would have been basketball for sure.
For sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, basketball, it's a lot more fun than football.
Yeah.
And because it's you're inside.
Yeah.
there's no zero, 20 below.
Yeah.
In December.
Yeah.
It's not 100 degrees, 110 degrees out in Atlanta during the summer or Kansas City.
That shit is so brutal, man.
Oh, it's tough. Football's a tough way to make a living.
It is
a tough way. It's the most exciting sport. I mean,
yeah.
I think I can say that. I don't even have to say it. The viewers say that, but
yeah.
Basketball was just—it's a smaller group. It's not as dog eat dog world.
Yeah.
Like it's a football's a man sport.
It is—you
will get bitched.
It's so savage, man.
Yeah.
It's so sad. I mean, like, I think one of the things that hits you when you love football and you play it on an amateur level is that you get around the higher level tiers of it, and you're like, this is so different. Like, this is. Like the levels of the athletes, the speed, the power, the hits. You're like, this really is like gladiator shit.
Yeah, it's just that even at the high school level, you have to go into that other dimension of, okay, like you said, like not, nobody's dying, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's like, you got to go there. You can't like not take it all the way. You got to be as aggressive as you possibly can.
That's what I love about coaches. Like they have like the lingerie football thing.
Uh-huh.
And you think, obviously, if you're watching that, you're like, come on, man. Like, is there anything else on? Like, you know, yeah. I mean, like they're not really. But then you watch this coach who's coaching, right? He's coaching the girls' lingerie stuff.
Yeah.
And listen to how he, like, this is exactly how the coaches I remember, right?
You gonna let that motherfucker mush you down now like that, and you ain't breaking that bitch's face right now? You mean to tell me you gonna allow that motherfucker to do what she done, and you didn't come out here and try to break her fucking neck, and even you can't find her teammate and break her fucking neck for what the fuck she done to you down now? You mean to tell me you ain't got that kind of evil streak in you? I would literally hike the ball and punch that bitch in the goddamn face. Are you crazy? Don't ever let anybody do you like that.
I love him. All right. It's a little, you shouldn't break necks.
No.
But the point is,
I can't condone that.
Condone that, but you can condone it's the mentality. It's the mentality of like, I remember like watching that clip reminds me of a seventh grade football coach who's like, are you going to let these guys just push you guys around like that?
That's the pregame speech, right?
Yeah, right.
And then back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't say break their necks, but they would say, if you're not going to hit somebody in the face, why do you even sign up to play this?
Sure,
and you go, starts putting it in your head when you're young.
Yeah. Yeah. Be the hammer, not the nail.
Yeah.
You got to, you know, bring it every time. Bring the pain.
Bring the pain.
And it's fun, but you know that's I think that's going away.
That right there.
I think it's. I don't know how old that clip.
Not in women's football. It's not. It might be going out of men's football, but it's just firing up the women's league.
Well,
break their fucking necks.
Well, they got. Yeah, I can't condone.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Oh man, I love it so much. Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was, I went to Chris Dolman's football camp when I was a kid.
Mm.
You remember Chris Dolman?
Yeah.
For the Vikings, right?
Yeah, and, Hall of Famer.
And we would, they bring, like with those camps, they bring in all, you know, their friends and players. And there was one, I forget his name, man. There was a Packer who came in, who was like a running back. He was like, first of all, you know, I don't even like football that much. And we were like, what? like you're in the NFL. He's like, I wish I could play basketball.
Yeah.
This shit is brutal. And then he started his like thing. But like he started off by telling us that he wished he was not in the NFL.
Football's changed a lot though. When I came in 97, it was that league of just God, what was the Oklahoma drill?
Yeah, yeah.
Bull in the ring type stuff.
Yeah.
They could when you go over the middle, I mean, the game, they wanted to knock you out of the game.
Yeah.
Concussion, that word was never used. It was got your bell rung. Oh, you okay? Get back in the game.
Yeah.
But the NFL has done such a good job of changing that. Now, the game is considerably safer where they've taken the head out of the game and they've done it at the height. Like we're talking before, my son who played football last year.
Yeah.
It's different. They're coaching at that level too. And you see it now. Guys are or tackling, you know, between the knee and the head. That's where you're supposed to hit.
Yeah.
And stuff happens once in a while. It's the NFL. It's always going to happen.
Of course. And like, I mean, people ask me, they go, because they'll know I like football, and they go, would you let your sons play football? And I go, yeah. And they go, really? Even with all this news? I'm like, first of all, like if there's anything that I do, like that I can credibly talk about, it's playing like I played peewee and high school football. And my thought on it is that most of your hits in those years, most are like it's form tackling. You're not playing against Tony Gonzalez every week.
Yeah.
You're playing against other fucking fat sophomores. So like they're not impressive. Like I remember, I mean, I had Heath Evans on here because we played high school football against each other. And I go, I remember that hitting you was different. Like even back then, I can remember being in high school and being like, God, that guy is a truck,
yeah,
right? And then of course, you know, we graduate, we watch him go on to Auburn and the NFL, and you're like, oh yeah, that dude was notably different. But I go, you take that game and then that's the only game where we're like, this is a problem hitting this guy. But everybody else, it's like, I go, you know, could I have been concussed with him? Yeah, I probably was.
Yeah.
But like, if you know, that one dude versus all those games, I don't know. I don't feel like I have to run away from the sport because there might be, you know, somebody out there who's a fucking, you know, rocket launcher or something. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it's not, I understand the comments of people saying like, you know, if you are, like we're talking about D1, if you are going to D1, like you're definitely going to feel that impact every play, and you need to be that level athlete too to be able to deal with it and so on and so forth. But I'm just not as freaked out about that little league stuff.
Well, my kid, they played and they want to play. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Why would I deny you something that I did?
And they bought this house, kids.
Yeah.
You like this food? You like your clothes you're wearing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dad bought it with football.
Yeah. So, take it.
Yeah.
Tell him every day. It's my house.
Is your
not yours?
Yeah.
Who? But you take care of yourself too, though.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I said you're an anomaly, and I mean it. I mean, you have to be, like, first of all, how many NFL players do you think, current or former, are on flights reading books and taking notes about the book? Like, that's what I saw you doing on a flight, and you're sitting there reading your book and taking your notes for yourself, I assume.
Yeah. Oh, it's for myself.
Yeah. I mean, are we up to maybe three current or former players that would
do that? You'd be surprised, but yeah, it's not a common thing.
For sure.
I don't know. Is it that common for anybody though? Yeah.
That's another good point.
Do people really want to?
No, that's true. Books? I don't know. I mean, you doctors.
I'm curious. I did this at my Hall of Fame. Book changed my life. I never read when I was a kid.
No?
Or high school or college.
When did you start?
Barely even required reading. I wouldn't read the book. I'd get the cliff notes.
When did you start?
I've told this story a bunch. My second year in the league, I led the league in drop passes in the NFL and got benched twice. Got booed by the home crowd.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh yeah, it was. I was playing, but I got benched twice, and my stepbrother, my adopted brother Donnie, he sent me a book of quotes by Vince Lombardi. Hey, and I always like, I don't know if you know Vince Lombardi, everybody knows Vince Lombardi, you know, like the greatest moment of a man's life is when he lies totally exhausted on the battlefield, glorious and winning.
Yeah.
All those quotes. And so off of that, I was like, I was pretty charged up. I'm like, well, this is some good stuff. I need this in the middle, you know, the season was almost over. So I went out and bought his book, When Pride Mattered or whatever, it's a thick book. And I read the whole thing in like 5-6 days because it was just speaking to me. Like it was a page turner and I couldn't put it down. And then based off of that, I was like, holy shit, I've been doing it the wrong way. I thought I was working hard. I thought I was doing it the right way. It wasn't because I was lacking, like I was out partying and doing a bunch of stuff I shouldn't have been doing. I thought I was quote unquote doing it the right way, but there was another level there. And that book taught me that. And so off of that, I was like, well, I want some more of this. And I started reading like about Michael Jordan's routine. I started reading about Lou Holtz books, Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, start going through all these books. And then I start getting into all these, and it just spiraled out of there. And books is like this is great. It changed my life.
Yeah.
And so that's why today, I always have a book that I'm reading.
Wow. So it not only like opened you, like obviously made you curious and you loved consuming the knowledge, but those books, or at least like in specifically some of these ones, helped change how you started to prepare for the game?
Changed everything.
Really?
Well, because you start reading about other people. Say you're a comedian and I don't know, who's the best comedian?
Right, like Chappelle or
Chappelle right now. So you're like, okay, there's a book on Chappelle, on his life and like how he, and it's out there, I'm sure.
Right.
Like, okay, what does he do? Like, why Chappelle? Why is he so funny? Like, what's making him who he is? I'm very curious.
He's like,
that.
Well, I smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day, I do 6-hour sets. And you're like, great, I'll pick up both of those.
6-hour sets.
Dude, he will. He not doing them right now, but in regular times, there's multiple, like you can check it with the Punchline in San Francisco, I'm sure in Dayton. I know Melrose in the store, he would come in, commonly do 3 and 4 hours, but it's not 3 and 4 hours of like when you watch a special.
Yeah.
It's him, that's how he basically writes, right? So he'll go up there and everybody's so enamored with him and he's such a master of not just being funny, but being interesting in conversation, that he'll go on those long ones, just sit there, what do y'all want to talk about? Just start talking. And then it could be like 25 minutes of just like...
Just talking,
and there's no... You don't feel like you're at a comedy show, but you feel engaged.
Yeah.
And then boom, all of a sudden hit like a maybe 10 minutes of just rocking, just, you know, huge laughs. And then, you know, something happens, starts talking about that. And all of a sudden you're 2.5-3 hours in.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but he's very, very unique. And I don't know that type of preparation would even translate for more people. But I get what you're saying. Like, I'm just saying him specifically, very unique in that, in just the ability to do that, you know? Uh-huh. Like, if you told me, Tom, go tonight, just go do 4 hours. I'd be like, no, I don't want
to. I bet you could, though.
I bet I probably could. If here's the thing. If you're in an environment where... I think it helps in that kind of thing to be in a small space. Everybody wants to be there. In other words, they came to see you.
Yeah.
They're that interested in you. I can see going long. I could see that going long. I think what always kind of blew my mind was how long. I'd be like, you've got to be, I don't want to talk to anybody for fucking 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to talk to my wife, my parents, my friend, like 6 hours, man.
Yeah.
No. But like there's a couple other people that could do like those really long sets, but I think they have like a real stream of consciousness thing that they tap into.
Well, I believe all into that stuff too.
Yeah.
That it's like the Beatles. I don't know. There's a great book called Outliers. Uh-huh. Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, I've read that.
You read that book? Remember the story? I think that's where
the 10,000 hours comes
10,
from.
10,000 hours types thing. And there's also talent and genetics.
And the timing. Too.
And the timing. The
timing has to work out.
But like with the Beatles, right? They were they were working at that place playing 8 hours a day.
Yes. And that 10,000 hours thing applies, I believe, 100% to stand-up. Like when I think back on my own career, and I, you know, some of us talk about this sometimes about like, remember those years where you go like, wow, man, like I was working a day job and all week was about like getting to Saturday to go to a place that didn't even want me to go on. And I would do 10 or 12 minutes and the joy of those 10 or 12 minutes would carry me through my next week.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know what I mean? Like I so was like high off of that I would be like, I don't care about how shitty this job is. I can't believe I get to do that again next week. And then, you know, shit gigs and bars where like, they don't want to turn the TV off. You're like, how am I supposed to talk to these people? Your TV's on, you know? And we used to always have this thing where we'd go, the worst was the Lakers in the playoffs, right? If you if you live in LA and you do comedy, like as soon as they made the playoffs, you'd be like, fuck, like shows are going to be fucked this month because like people will go to shows less. And if you try to have a show during a game, they would be like, no, your show is waiting. Like the game is the priority. Like, you know, so like those May, June shows, you would be like, oh God, man, like please either let's just get past this or lose so that we can do shows.
Yeah. Well, being a comedian, I'm fascinated with comedians.
Yeah.
Like I watch all the little specials. Like there's that one, I don't know if you've seen it, called Dying of Laughter. It's a documentary. It's amazing.
Dying of Laughter. Which one is that?
Oh, it's amazing. I'm telling you, this is, it blew me away, the process. And you talked about going out on the road. It's all about, and they have some really good, like I think Kevin Hart, like it's some headliners in there talking about it.
I gotta watch that.
You gotta see it. You know, you'll
Dying Laughing,
it.
Is that it?
Yeah, Dying Laughing, I'm sorry. Dying okay. Laughing. And they talk about their process and how you have to go out on the road, like you talked about, and you're playing in some little hobunk town in the middle of nowhere. And like the guy's like, he's like, I had to pay him to perform.
Oh, yeah.
And people are like on their lunch break, listening, not even listening to you.
We were talking about how we used to, in these early days, you'd be booked. Like someone would be like, okay, your spot's over here at this like restaurant or something. And you're like, okay. And you show up. And then right then you'd go, do the people at this restaurant know there's a show? And they're like, no. And you're like, wait a minute. So we're attacking them like with a show while they like, you mean they just want to have dinner with their spouse? And we're like, no, you're going to watch stand up. And they're like, I guess so. And I was like, oh my God.
That sucks
because they're like, it's not like they're like, ah, I'm not a fan. They're literally like, I'm trying to eat.
Yeah, shut up.
And like, I didn't come to a comedy show. And you're like, well, you are now. You're at the show now.
That's what I'm saying. It's so fascinating about you guys. Like it's the scariest thing I could ever think of.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, when I think of like the first spots I ever had, they are some of the most terrifying moments.
How do you?
And bombing.
That's what they talk about a lot in there. Dying. It's actually, I was crying watching that documentary because I'm seeing these comedians. They start crying because they go back to, they take us back to when they bombed.
Dude, it's the worst
feeling ever.
It would be like if it was like fourth and goal and you caught the ball on the one, and then instead of crossing to the goal line, you ran to the other end zone and then shit your pants. And then everybody was like, what happened to that guy? You're like, I bombed. That's what just happened. Yeah. It's the worst feeling.
Oh, it's got to be the worst. And it happens a lot though, right? It's not. Well, it does. At the beginning?
At the beginning, it happens definitely more. And it is like, what it is like, it's like an internal panic. It's funny. It could be 25 degrees outside, and if you're bombing, you'll start sweating, you know, like it's panic sweats, and you just feel like you want to, it's like the feeling of you want the parachute to open.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, man. And especially if you have time, like they're like, you need to keep going. You like, sometimes when you're starting out, you're doing 10-minute sets. So if you're bombing, at least it's over in 10 minutes, you know, as you're further along, you could start a set, eat shit with your first joke and be like, well, I'm going to try to recover. And you don't. Yeah. And you're like, I have to do this for another half an hour, or like it's rough, man.
Have you ever been booed off?
Yes,
you've been booed off.
They were like, please leave. Yeah, yelling. They were
the whole
like,
crowd's like, boo,
you suck,
off,
fuck
get
you.
Off.
Yeah, like it was. Yeah, really intense. Here's the thing, though.
I just couldn't imagine.
You know what
that.
A boo like? That's not the worst.
I've been booed. I guess I have been booed, but
being booed off stage doesn't feel the worst. Because it feels unwarranted. Like it's so, you know what I mean? Like if somebody like says like, hey asshole, you know, what the fuck's like calls you out in a room, you might be like, oh my God, like it's just kind of embarrassing. But if everybody was screaming at the top of their lungs, you're like, hey, like this, it feels too much.
Uh-huh.
I almost feel like the worst bombs are quiet bombs where you're like, going for a laugh and then you just hear like
nothing.
Like somebody like cleaning their teeth, like, and you're like, okay. Like that feels worse than like, bah! Like, cause when someone's that upset, you're like, I'm just telling, like, you're so mad that you're yelling for me to leave. It just feels like, you know, but it was surreal. It was surreal.
But you guys are like a conductor too. At least what I've seen, the comedy shows that I've gone to, like when somebody bombs and then the next guy up, who even, I've had comedians, they'll be like, hey, I got to get the comedy. I got to get the laughter back in here because you guys, this person just ate shit.
Oh yeah. Like people don't realize what you want to follow in comedy is somebody who does really well. Like on those shows where it's a lineup of like 10 plus comics, sometimes people will think they're like, well, that guy sucked, so now you'll shine. Like, no, you want the guy to do well. Get the room laughing and feeling good and ride the wave.
Yeah.
Like the wave's already there. If somebody kills in front of you, you can actually jump on and just keep it going.
Yeah.
If somebody just eats shit or like says something that just ruins the room, you're doing the work to bring them back to being a regular show.
Tell me this. How do you deal with the bombing though? How do you, like, emotionally?
It's a good question. It is an experience, man. Like, the thing is, when you start off, you don't even know how to process it. You do things like psychological things, like tell yourself, you know, it wasn't you, you know, it was them. And then you start to, a lot of times, you know, you record your sets. So you start going back and you go, oh, the phrasing or they didn't get it. Like you start to rationalize why you did poorly, you know, it's like justifying a mistake or a bad decision. You know, you start to like make it make sense to you.
Yeah.
The simple answer is that the only solution to bombing and having a bad set is having a good set. Uh-huh. So like, I remember nights where like even, I don't know, a year ago or so, I remember doing a set in town at a place and I did a joke that went fucking sideways. Like people were like, you should leave. Like, uh-huh. like they were upset about it and it still sucked. I was like, I'm like 18 years in and I was like, man, that sucks. So I just went, drove to another place, did a set with the same joke and it killed.
Uh-huh.
And then you feel like that the emotions of it, because if you leave after just that bombing set, you take that with you. You take that home.
It's gotta be hard to sleep.
That's
what they say. Comedians are.
Yeah,
They're not right in the head. Right?
Not right. Yeah. Not right. Yes.
Is that what they say? I mean, you guys are psychopaths.
Right? The bombing will. Yeah, I've stabbed people. I punched a guy's fucking teeth out. I hit a guy with a brick one time. It was fun. Wait, I want to ask you about something. So wait, you. For a long time, didn't you have Dick Vermeil as a head coach?
Yeah, for 5 years.
How much did he cry?
A lot.
Like, a lot.
Yeah, all
I used
the time.
To see, like, the you know, those NFL films coverage things, and it was like it was just like a great win. He was like, you guys, fuck.
Well, that was him. Like, he knew it was coming. And it was hardly tears, though.
Really?
He would get choked. It was more choked up.
He'd
be
choked up.
He'd be in the front. Especially if you ever talk about Trent Green. Remember Trent Green, and he was in.
Yes.
He was our quarterback. And he had hurt his knee, and so that's when Kurt Warner came in, and Kurt Warner, just the rest is history.
Yes.
But that was Trent Green starting before the Rams, before they won that Super Bowl.
That's right.
And so Trent goes down, and he comes over to us, and that's what, anytime Nick would talk about Trent, you knew it was coming, but it was never tears. It was just like,
choked,
you know, and Trent Green, he's a good boy, he's a good guy.
And
good
would man. Guys, like, guy. They would take it well?
You'd or? Get it, at the beginning, you're like, like your eyes were getting wider. Yeah. Like, well, this guy cares. But I think, like most coaches, I think great coaches are the ones that are nice and steady. Like Bill Belichick is the greatest.
Consistent.
Just consistent.
Yeah.
Never too high, never too low. Because you get those emotional coaches when you, it's great when you're winning.
Yeah.
But when you start losing, that's when you start to lose the team. Because if you've only got two wins on the season and you're 2-10 or 2-8, you're tired of the shit. You're like, hey, I can't have any more. It's not working.
It's not
like
working.
You're doing all this rah-rah stuff. It's not working. And you look at someone like Pete Carroll from the Seattle Seahawks. I love him. Mm-hmm. I would love to play for a guy like that.
Enthusiastic. Energy, positive. He seems like a very positive guy.
But a couple of years ago, they went through that little losing phase. Yep. There was little rumblings that he's going to get fired and all this stuff. And the guys were getting tired of it. It's because, you know, when you're losing, I just want to go to work.
Do you, as a player, ever have the thing, when you're a fan at home, right? And this is nothing new to you, but you know that, like, you know, fans watch games and they're like, why the fuck are they passing the ball in third and whatever, you know? Yeah. Like, why aren't they running the ball in third and two?
Yeah.
When you're on a team and you're a player, do you guys ever have those same, like, right? Like, you're like, why are we
every game?
Here? Every game.
Every game in the huddle. I'm complaining.
Really?
If it's third and four.
Yeah.
Third and four and third and five.
Yeah.
That's where I'm like, hey, you come to the big dog.
Come call.
I can get this.
Yeah.
And then we run the ball or something like that. Or they call a play that I know and that's coming, that's not going to come to me. I'm like, what the hell?
And you run off the side. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, because I'm your all pro. Like, I've showed you, I've caught this 1,000 times. Like,
yeah,
why wouldn't you call my number?
Yeah.
I don't understand it. But, you know, that's coaching. That's playing and that's That's normal.
When do you know? Like, is there a moment, or is it a transition where you realize you're not just like in the NFL and a good player, but you're actually you're like, oh, I'm gonna probably be in the Hall of, like, is there, you know what I mean? Like, it's so, Hall of Famers, like, you guys are, you're the outliers of the outliers. You know what I mean? Like, it's so remarkable to be in that group.
It's a pretty special group.
It's such a special group. I mean, and I think a lot of fans, like, if you really follow the games, and you realize that, like, man, these are the standouts of the stand, like the fraction of the percentage of people that make it to the NFL, and then these are like the very, very best.
Yeah.
Is it like through your career, you're like, oh, well, I guess this is building to that?
You start to hear it from people.
People start saying it.
I remember Kellen Winslow, who's a tight end in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Played for the Chargers.
Senior.
Yeah.
Junior's got a little extracurricular stuff going on. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Not right now.
Yeah.
So anyways, I was doing something at a golf chair, and I had gone to a couple Pro Bowls by then, and he comes up, and he's like my guy, you know, I look up to the tight end, and he comes up to me, and he said something, hey, Hall of Famer's over there. And he was talking to me. Mm-hmm. It was the first time someone ever said that to me, and it's coming from Kellen.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the first time I ever heard it.
And this is, are you like 10 years in? Or?
I'm about 7 years, 7 years in.
Oh, wow.
To the NFL. So I'd gone about five Pro Bowls at this point.
Okay.
And so I was on my way.
Yeah.
But you know, you still don't think Hall of Fame, like there's only 200. And when I got in, there was only 226. So now there's 231 players.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like 60 that's executives right, and
they
coaches
have like broadcasters
and, stuff
like that. And all, yeah.
But players, that's it.
That's really small, man.
1 year.
That's like, really small.
Yeah. So it's, you don't think, at least I didn't. At least that was, people were like, how does it feel? Did you always think you'd be a Hall of Fame? I'm like, shit, no.
Yeah, I mean, it's a like, crazy thing to say. Was it hard to, because I keep going, one of the things that I appreciate the most, not just in athletics, I mean, in all careers, but yeah, especially in athletics, is longevity, right? And, you know, we talked about that you played smart, you're taking care of yourself. Is it hard to motivate yourself for season 15?
Yeah, it is. It does. I mean, you go through a little lulls. It was harder in the middle of my career.
Yeah.
Where, you know, I was showing up and it was the same, because football, it's a bunch of just, it's routine.
Yeah.
It's just doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. There's no real, besides the games, the week, there's no creativity. There's nothing you haven't seen before. So that got kind of old for me. I'd have to look for ways to, and I'd write like little letters to myself.
Yeah.
Little ways to keep motivating myself. Like they say Jordan would do that. He'd make shit up in his head to get himself motivated. And that's what I would do. I'd be like, hey, they're doubting you. Before I'd write it.
Really?
They're doubting you. They think you're old. They think you're overrated. They're saying such and such is better than you.
You would write that note.
I'd write it to myself. And then I'd read that before the game. And I'd be like, it's not going to. It's not true.
That's awesome.
But towards the end of my career, I started to savor because the window was over. Like after you get to year 12, you're like, shit, I only got 1 year left.
Yeah.
And then I'd play that. So I would be like, okay, I'm going to put everything I have into it, enjoy it. I really enjoyed myself. When I got to Kansas, to Atlanta, my last 5 years, I was Kansas City 12 years and then went to Atlanta for 5 years. And I was only going to play 2 years in Atlanta, but I kept coming back.
And you're enjoying your teammates.
I was enjoying my teammates and they were paying me pretty well.
Yeah, so that helps. That always helps.
When I got to the league, there was a difference. It wasn't like these $500 million contracts. Dude. It wasn't like that at all. I remember my rookie deal. I signed a 6-year deal for $7 million and I got a $3 million signing bonus, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not out of touch.
Yeah.
But comparatively speaking, that's not shit compared to what you're getting now. I remember back then the guys on my team were like, damn, Tom, you got seven rich boy. Like, whoa.
What was the first thing you bought that was like, you know, that wasn't cheap? You know what I mean? Like, did you buy something stupid?
A house.
We bought a house.
We bought a house for $270,000.
In KC.
In Kansas City.
Wow.
To finish the pool, was 290.
Was it 9.5 bedrooms?
5,000 square feet. Out in the suburbs of Kansas City.
Wow. That's wild. You know, I also look back now, like with some age on me, I go, I have way more compassion for young guys not knowing how to handle their money.
Oh,
like, you know, when I was when I was the age of the player, I was like, these fucking, why are you spending all your money? But then as you get older, you're like, oh yeah, like who the fuck's ready for like whatever, $3 million or $25 million at 22?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't know how to handle that then.
No, who does? I mean, musicians don't. Actors don't. Those young kid actors giving Justin Bieber, you know, that much money.
It's, yeah.
Why do you expect them not to go a little crazy?
Of course.
And everybody tells you how great you are and you got millions of dollars to get whatever you want.
And why? And then like, you know, most people probably are like, yeah, this is always going to happen. This, you know what I mean? These checks are going to, I'm 22. These are going to come in all the time. And then,
you start. You start if you're a fan of the nightlife,
yes.
I was a good fan of the nightlife. I enjoyed.
You had your good times.
Yeah, I enjoyed going out. I was single for 10 years.
Oh, you had a NFL. Real good time.
Yeah, I enjoyed myself.
What was the best city to go to for having a good time?
Miami and Vegas.
Okay, so nothing's changed. Good.
I like Miami and Vegas.
I mean, you can't really.
I still do.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a good time in Miami, you know.
Yeah.
You got a problem.
Especially, dude. The Latino in you,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, of course, man. Yeah. I mean, parties, like, I've been to Miami where they're like, cool, we'll meet up at midnight. And you're like, wait, what? Like, we're going to meet up at midnight.
Yeah, a buddy of mine has a Halloween party out there every year. And I've never gone to it because of football. But on the invite, it says from 9 o'clock till 10 a.m.
Yeah.
9 to 10 a.m. the next day.
That's a party.
It's a party.
That's a party.
I'm like, are you serious?
And if it has that little LaShawn McCoy touch where he's like, no males allowed. You know what I'm saying? We're not looking for men to come. He has like his circle of friends is like, it's just going to be us and ladies.
Oh, man.
I'm like, that's a good party.
I'm getting older now. I can't do it like I used to. If I can get to 3 a.m., 2, 3 a.m., that's a real, real good night. That's rare for me.
Yeah, I've changed completely. I mean, before we had kids, we were just talking about like how I would go to bed regularly, like on a Tuesday night at 2:30 in the morning, and wake up at 10 to 11 and be like, what am I going to do today?
Yeah.
And now we are up at 6:30 to 7 every morning. And by noon, I've done 10 things. Like, you know what I mean? I've had a workout and I did meetings and email. It's just a complete change. And I feel like my alcohol tolerance is, I mean, I'm like a child.
Yeah.
Like I have a couple drinks and I feel it for 3 days.
I don't drink that much anymore.
Yeah.
Just a little Modelo here and there. And,
what, tequila. Your joints, legs, everything's fine? You're good?
Yeah, I am very cognizant of, I'm really into health and biohacking and so I intermittent fast.
You do?
And I, you know, the magnesium supplementation.
Okay.
MCT oil, I do sauna, cold showers.
Oh, wow, you're really
meditate,
into it.
All that stuff.
Wow.
To get your, you know, mind, body, spirit
and then
going.
Do you prepare... I imagine without knowing that you would have a real preparation for like leading up to Sundays going on the air. Right?
Yeah.
Like you take care of like a whole routine.
Got a routine. What time I'm going to go to bed. What time I'm going to wake up.
How early are you there on a Sunday? I imagine it's early.
5 a.m.
Wow.
That's the wake up time.
That's the wake up time.
I get around 4:45, 5 a.m. Wow. And we're on set at 5:45.
No shit.
Yeah. Getting ready. So
this is something I wanted to ask you. So I imagine that a lot of people that when you're playing and that, you know, it's game week, we're playing the Chiefs, we're playing the Falcons, and then they go, fuck, like I gotta take care of Gonzalez this week. This is going to suck, right? But who did you ever say like, oh, this is going to be some work this week?
I don't know if I ever had that attitude where I was like,
no, you know, just like,
I want to bring it. Usually it's, honestly, I didn't really care about the other play. I should answer this question. So like Rodney Harrison.
Okay.
He's a thumper back in the day. He probably wouldn't even play that much now because the way his style of play, he couldn't do that nowadays. That physicality.
Really?
Take your head off.
Oh, right.
Come over the middle. You're like,
I'm going to lay you out.
I gotta be careful. I think it was Cam Chancellor, the strong safety.
No shit.
He's... sixth
Seahawks,
and I got we had some battles and I got him a bunch of times he got me a couple times, but he was 6'3", 230 pounds playing strong safety.
Like, the safety position really grew over the last, I mean like all positions, but Well, I've met two where I'm like, you play safety, dude? Like, they're so tall, so yeah. long. And he was laying people out.
Oh, like putting them out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that was just right when the rules were changing. So you can yes. still play. That style of play, it doesn't, that big knock your head off guy over the secondary, is just, it's not there anymore.
And what about like...
You can't do it. It's against the rules.
Because obviously you get, you know, you're running routes, but you're blocking on, like, is there horrible memories of blocking anyone?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a mismatch for us.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest mismatch in football. Yeah. It is. It's the biggest mismatch in football. We have it both ways as tight ends.
Right.
Blocking a defensive end, we're 250 pounds on average or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit less than that. And those guys are around 290 pounds.
Right.
And so it's not fair. They're benching 500 pounds. We bench 350 or whatever. It's just, they're just bigger physically.
These are like rhinos, man.
So that sucked blocking those guys.
Yeah.
And you have to be crafty because I can't outpower you.
Yeah. Like Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's a kind of a, I guess, hybrid outside rusher, linebacker type.
I would rather block Khalil Mack though, because he's a little bit smaller than the big traditional Reggie White defensive end.
That.
Or Michael Strahan. When he played defensive end, I'd get ready for him. Like, damn, his big old ass, like, he's 290 pounds. Like, it's just, I'd rather go against the guy who's 260, like Khalil Mack.
Sure.
Because at least I'm quick. I'm really quick, so I can just get in front of him. Yeah, he'll outpower him, but I just got to hold on for 3 seconds.
Three seconds to get the back by. Sure. You
know? So that was always the... But then on the opposite, I have the biggest mismatch in the passing game.
Right.
Because at least for back then, now these linebackers are really getting bigger, faster, stronger, but... I'm going against a linebacker that I know I'm faster than.
Sure.
And I'm going against a strong safety or a corner who's way smaller than me. So I outweigh you by 30 pounds.
So they're either going to throw it up or you're going to.
Yeah, just throw it up. Even if you guard me. I was guarded so many times, I'd just jump over you and catch it. So.
Yeah, and you have the basketball hops too. Yeah. Like you're not. Yeah, it sucks, man. I mean, I feel like why. Like, I mean, I used to watch those like Reggie White highlights of the hump move, you know, and like. Like no tape, no gloves, just like, oh, I just woke up and washed my hands.
This beast.
Here we go. And just throwing. The thing about these highlights, like the clips now that I always remind myself of, is that when you see somebody just like getting bodied or burnt, you know, it's like, yeah, but the guy that's getting his ass kicked in that play is a badass. You know what I mean? Like we're watching that play. I watched it so many times where DK Metcalf caught Buda Baker. And I was like, yeah, but you know, Buda runs like a fucking 4.3 40 or something, right? Like that dude's lightning fast.
Yeah.
This shit is unbelievable to me, man.
Yeah.
Like, and he's starting at least 10 yards back, you know, from him.
That's a track right there. And that guy got in front of him and he had to restart.
He had to restart. I mean,
that was incredible. When I saw that, I was on my couch. I was jumping up and down.
Yeah.
You know, like all athletes out there got it. Like this made us jump out of our seat.
Oh, yeah.
This is just like Patrick Mahomes throwing her behind the back shoulder. Yes. Like that was equivalent to that. It's something that'll be on his highlight when he's done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember seeing that dude's, I kind of like peeked into the combine last year. I wasn't like following it intensely, but they were like, I remember seeing a time. And they're like, you know, this dude weighs like 235. And I was like, what? Because he ran a really crazy 40.
Yeah.
But to me, I felt like what would be embarrassing was what was that Khalil Mack thing. Because I identified with the offensive lineman.
Uh-huh.
The one on this play where like after the play, there's Mack and then the guys and then he just throws him. I was like, I'm 78. I'm 78 and I'm like going back. I'm like, did everybody see that? Like asking myself, oh God, is that going to be on SportsCenter?
No, poor guy. That guy's a rookie too.
He's a rookie. And then he's like, oh, I'm still pushing. And he's like, oh, I'll just
judo swing you.
Oh my God. He's like 330 and you're getting like, he has no memories of that ever happening besides that play.
Oh, I love it. And that's when you, the average guy who sees the football and they're like, oh, I could have done that or whatever. It's like, what? If you only knew how big and explosive someone like Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald is.
Oh, my God, man.
It's ridiculous.
You know, I do this podcast with Bert Kreischer and we have like challenges. Like we challenge each other to things, right? We play tennis. We're going to play one-on-one. He goes, do you think we could like double team Aaron Donald like as a thing? And I was like, That happens in the NFL. And he wins. What are you talking about? He's like, so should we do it? I go, I'll tell you what, I would love to watch you do it. And then I'll ride in the back of the hospital, the ambulance with you.
Yeah.
Like, no, we can't do that, dude. We'll die.
They had a Joe... Pros versus Joe.
Yes.
I think Strahan hosted it.
Yeah, yeah. That was, I saw, I remember watching, what was his name? Slash, Cordell Stewart.
Uh-huh.
I remember that specifically, that the regular dude was like a regular, like just goofy guy who was like, okay, Cordell, let's see what you got. And like the other pros on that episode, like there was a baseball player and a basketball player, and they were like, dude, you have no idea. And Cordell Stewart laid down. Like, it was a goal line. It was like an Oklahoma drill.
Uh-huh.
It was like, put his shoulder down and just trucked this.
Trucked
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, brutal.
Kevin Green was on there, too. And I think I remember him just lighting somebody up.
Yeah.
Those guys all had to sign waivers.
Of
like,
course.
If you die,
yeah,
it's on you.
And by the way, you might. Like, like, dude, there's, I mean, nothing better than what, I mean, I don't want to see, like, it happen to some guy who didn't ask for it, but some guy who's like, you know what, Tony Gonzalez, you ain't shit. And I'm going to show you right now, like, okay. Let's do it. Let's line up and see how it goes. The separation of athleticism is quite different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I love, so I played pickup basketball a lot. I did that all throughout my career. That was my off-season training.
Really?
I'd play in the pro leagues. I played for the Miami Heat. We played for their summer league team. Tried out Pat Riley.
Yeah.
Was my coach.
Yeah.
And Spoelstra, Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah.
But anyways, So, but I'm not a pro. Like,
right.
I'm good. I'm right on that tier. Yeah. Like, I maybe could have went pro, but I would have never, like, been a starter.
Right.
But I maybe could have made a roster or whatever. And I'd go play pickup basketball with all these guys that think they're really good.
Right. Like, in the neighborhood.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Really good. Like, they're good. But they, you know, they played probably high school basketball or whatever. And I'm just dominating them. And these guys, like, really think they have a shot.
Yes.
To go play pro. Like,
pro.
Like, oh, I can.
Yeah.
Because you crossed up your friend, you know, your buddy who works at the, you know, the department store.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the.
It's not the same thing,
like,
dude.
People don't understand the levels
of
competition as you move up to the professional ranks.
Oh, my God.
It's night and day. Literally, it's night and day.
I've told this story before, but, like, I remember being in high school, you know, being a two-way starter and, like, having Division I fantasies, right? Like the natural thing, like I want to play, like watch the games, want to play. And I go with a friend of mine who was highly recruited and played at D1 level. I went with him to a Miami game. It was just back in the OB Orange Bowl. And we're standing on the sidelines and we're just standing there and they're playing Syracuse. And those guys came out of the tunnel and I'm looking at like my position players and I'm eye level with their numbers. Like I'm seeing here and I was like, I'm definitely not gonna play Division I.
No.
I was like, oh shit, these guys would kill me.
It's just genetics. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, but it was like, it was a, like that's all I needed. And I was like, all right, that's clear. Like these guys are monsters, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, all dudes were like your height or bigger and they were like 315, 320.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, no, this is not. This
athletic
is not
too.
Quick dudes. Yeah. Dude, it was a whole other thing. It was a whole other thing. Did you talk shit? Were you a trash talker at all?
No. I find when I did that would take me out of my game.
Interesting.
But I enjoyed it when somebody else would talk to me.
You did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It would fuel you or what?
Oh, yeah. Like, it gave me, like, that's all I needed. Like, I'd want you to.
What kind of trash would get talked to you?
Well, especially, like, you ain't shit.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's the normal you ain't shit. That's probably the big, you're a bitch.
You ain't making the Pro Bowl today, Tony.
like that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay. Yeah. And my biggest comeback was always, especially because when you go to the Pro Bowl, you're playing against the best of the best.
Yeah.
And so like someone like Cam Chancellor, me and him aren't going to talk shit to each other. It's not going to happen because we have that mutual respect for each other.
Yeah.
It's always the shit talking always comes from the guy that I don't even know who you are.
Right.
And I would tell him that on the field.
Yes. That I love.
That's the way I would talk shit.
That's one of my favorite ones.
Yeah. It's like,
There's that great clip of, what is his name? Aaron, what was the running back for the Texans? A few years back.
Arian Foster.
Where it's like, there's a clip that rotate that was like kind of viral where someone was like, yeah, man, that's what I'm talking about. And he goes, turn around, what's your name again? Turn around, let me see. I don't even know who you are, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was all about like, you know my name, I don't know your name.
Yeah.
So I love that shit. I always said that I would pay if the NFL was like, hey, there's a package where you can pay $1,000 and this season you can have the field mic pumped into the broadcast. I'd be like, how's 2000 sound? Because that's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
I would love to hear that. It bums me out when it's all bleeped and I'm like, oh no, I want to hear the real shit talking.
Oh, you would love it.
Yeah. I want the locker room, like this Turkish, was it soccer coach? Have you seen, like, when you leave, there's less rules, you know? Like, this is the kind of stuff I want to see on an NFL broadcast. All right, halftime, let's go. What's going on, coach?
What the? Shut up.
Yeah.
It can't be real.
That's real.
There's no way that's
real. That's real. That's a Turkish soccer coach who's like, you guys are fucking embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's awesome, right?
I wish.
You ever seen Year of the Bull?
No.
You've never seen that documentary?
Nuh-uh.
Dude, you got to watch Year of the Bull. Year of the Bull follows Miami Northwestern High School's football team for a season. And this is in the early 2000s. Miami Northwestern has produced, I mean, think about this. This is when the movie came out, which is at least 10 years ago. Something like 20 NFL players. Mm-hmm. I mean, like for one high school, and then like countless, you know, D1 players. And it's like, it's in Liberty City, which is a rough part of Miami. And the coaches are the most aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, that shit right there. Times 10.
Slapping people? I've never seen anything like that.
Oh.
That's amazing.
Dude, the opening scene.
What's wrong with that guy?
The opening scene to Year of the Bull is it's halftime, and I think at the state championship game, and they're in the locker room. And this dude, they have helmets on, but he has a glove on, and he's just smashing dudes' heads in. And he just says, why is the defense not working? That's it. Like 50 times. Why is the defense not working? Why? Like to every dude's head, everyone's like, fuck, man. Like they're in high, not like, hey, let's switch to fucking man coverage.
Oh,
just
man.
Why is this not working? I mean, it's wild, dude.
Oh, yeah. Man. Are you seeing Coach Snoop?
Yes.
Snoopy, he's like
when they kicked the guy off the plane.
I don't know if I saw that. Oh, dude, yeah. They kicked him out because he was talking to the kids wrong, right?
Shit. And they kicked him out. He's like, he's passionate, man. You know he's passionate about it. Like, dude, you got kicked off the flight.
Yeah, well, it was a little half dead. I think that was his name.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, talking that you would think that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, dude, it's intense.
I'm out of touch.
All right, now we're gonna play Rate Those Tits. We're gonna show you like 10. I'm just kidding.
Where's my manager? She's gonna like, freak out.
I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. You gotta run though, right? You said you gotta run.
So. Yeah, let me see how much time do I got. Yeah, I gotta go.
Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, I really appreciate you coming by. Thank you very much for this. It's fun. It's fun to talk to you, man. I wish I could talk to you for a long time. Congratulations on all your success. Amazing, obviously, playing career and broadcasting. Excited to see what you do next. So
thanks
for coming by, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So that was it. I had a really good time talking to Tony. Let me know if you guys enjoyed this, you know, leave a comment. Tell me if maybe people you want to see more of a one-on-one conversation with. Hope we can do it a lot more. And we'll see you soon.
Good rising. Hi, babe. On this great Saturday. Hi, babe. Great Saturday. I've been looking at your picture so long, babe. And they magnify my eyes, babe. Turn it to a telescope when I see your pain. You feel so good to me, babe. That when I meet you, you thought of me. I want you to melt me like hot chocolate candy, dude. And I with hot bro, but we cool. I love you, babe. You melt me every day, day. You feel so good to me, babe, day. Hi, babe, day. You feel so good to me, babe. Day. Help me every day. Day. You feel so good to me. Feel so good to me, babe. Babe. Turn into a telescope when I see your pain. You melt me every day. Turn it day. Turn into a telescope when I see your pain. Help me every day. Turn it day. Turn into a telescope when I see your pain. Help me every day. Day. Turn into a telescope when I see your pain. Day. Turn it day. Turn into a telescope.
Hi, thank you for watching that episode of Your Mom's House. I really appreciate it. If you want to see more, you can click on any of these videos in this general area. And also, if you haven't subscribed, please do.